This is Susanna McMonagle, and you're listening to Season 3 of the 5 to 8 Shift podcast for parents. The 5 to 8 Shift podcast and community exists to educate, inspire, and encourage parents throughout their parenthood adventure. Here, we talk about all the things impacting parents today, everything from mental health to technology to faith, teenagers, toddlers, self-care routines, and so much more. We know parenting is tough work, but family life is worth every ounce of effort. We hope you listen in, share with your favorites, and are reminded that you're not alone. We look forward to cheering you on in your own 5 to 8 shift. It's the most important shift of the day. Hey y'all, it's your host Susanna. Welcome to another episode of the 5 to 8 Shift. I hope you guys are having a great day, a great week, a great month. I hope your spring is off to a great start if you are listening to this around the release date. And so I love today's interview. It is something that I myself have really been kind of reading about and researching and trying to make a better experience for my own family. And you'll see I ask Bree some questions to this effect in the interview where I'm like, okay, so family dinner, yes, we prioritize it. Yes, we do it, and it is crazy town. And so she gives me some excellent advice and really has me thinking a little bit differently about family dinner and some changes that I'm gonna make to hopefully make it a more positive experience and to make it a little less stressful for my husband and I. And so I'm really excited to implement some of these changes. And so today's interview is with Bea DeRosa from the Family Dinner Project. And so this is a nonprofit. It was started by some people at Harvard. She references some amazing research to sort of back up like basically everything she says. She is a wealth of knowledge, and I have been trying to get them on the podcast for some time now. So I was so thrilled to make it happen. If you follow me on Instagram or have listened to several other podcast episodes, you know that I am a big believer in family time and time together and prioritizing it and being intentional, which is really hard to do because our lives are busy. I mean, we are totally back up to COVID, you know, pre-COVID speed, and we're feeling that. And so I think it's time to kind of reassess what stays in and what goes out and all the things. And so I think family dinner is such low-hanging fruit. Hey, these kids got to eat. Turns out they want to eat three times a day, every day, whether I feel like making them dinner or not. And so Bree really encourages us to set aside that time to be with your kids, to be present. Their website and their social media is so great. They have so many resources. They have conversation tips. They have some heavy, you know, research-based sports psychologists and talking to pediatricians and like so much good stuff. So their website is thefamilydinnerproject.org. Highly researched back. Bree references so much of it. This is just a fabulous interview that I'm super excited about. So y'all let me know what you think. I'm going to drop you into my conversation with Bree. As always, if you like this podcast, if you're new, welcome. I'm so glad you checked us out. If you've been listening to a few, we'd love your review on Apple or Spotify. Share with your friends in real life and on social media. Thanks for being here, guys. Hi, everybody. It's Susanna. Welcome to another episode of the 5 to 8 Shift for Parents. I am excited to bring you some content today with an organization that I love and have been following for a while called the Family Dinner Project. And so I have Bree DeRosa. Is that how you say your last name?
Yeah. Okay, awesome. That's right.
All right. Bree is going to be chatting with us today and sharing some insight and advice. And I'm really excited because I'm such a big believer in family dinner. But you probably have reasons why that are going to maybe compel people more than you know, some of the things that I can put together. So Bree, why don't you start by giving us a little introduction to you and what you do and maybe kind of before we dive in.
Sure. Yeah, I'm the content manager for the Family Dinner Project, and I've been with the organization for a number of years now, not quite since the start, but pretty close. And basically, I do all of our editorial. I get the opportunity to interview people and learn from families and look at all of the research that comes in and write up our newsletters and just be kind of an integral part of communicating all of the benefits of family dinners and all of the What's really important to us is that we are the how of family dinners, right? Lots of people can tell you why you should have dinner, but we like to try to translate that into what are the actual actionable steps that you can take to make this possible, right? And not totally crazy making.
Yes. And so I think that is going to be so helpful because I do think there's a lot of resources out there that, you know, they make these very compelling arguments and then you're like, okay, so what do I do tomorrow night?
Right.
How do I actually make this happen?
And, you know, I think also, like, let's just name right off the top that we live in this incredibly intense social media fishbowl, right?
Yeah,
where, like, our moms and grandmothers did not have the pressure of somebody being on Instagram being like, look at this amazing gourmet thing that I put together for my family every night. And I have 7 children who all eat kale and it's perfect. You know, like that never happened. So it was what it was, right? Yeah. And they didn't have to feel bad about what it was. And now I think we're kind of in a different landscape where people start to think that they have an obligation to do more than they actually have to do.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. Well, that's a good tidbit to start us off with. All right. So let me just dive right in here. Can you tell us a little bit how the Family Dinner Project came to be?
Sure. So the Family Dinner Project it's a nonprofit organization, and we are currently housed at Massachusetts General Hospital within the Psychiatry Academy. Back in the day when the Family Dinner Project got started, it was incubated at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And it was the brainchild of a group of people. There was a woman named Shelley London who was seeking a philanthropic project, essentially. She had stepped out of a long-term career in the corporate world and wanted to go on and do good. And she was looking for something that she could really wrap around. And she met Dr. Ann Fischel, who is our executive director. And Annie has pretty much dedicated, she's a clinical psychologist, family therapist, and she has pretty much dedicated her career to the study of family dinners and how just eating together. She has this great quote where she says, like, you know, she was in a therapy session with a father and a son, and it wasn't really going well. And they were at her in her home office and they could smell her dinner. Huh. And the son was like, can we stay and eat with you? And she was like thinking to herself, actually, you guys should really just go home and eat together, right? That would be so much more productive than what we're doing right now. If you would do this together every night, we might not be having the challenges that we're having right now. And so she and Shelley got together with a group of other professionals from across different disciplines, and they founded the Family Dinner Project based on the research that really shows that if you can sit down and eat with your family on a regular basis, there are potentially great benefits for everybody.
Okay. Wow. That is really such an impressive start to this. And so I just feel so grateful when people take like deep dives into things. You know, I feel like family dinner can get really caught up in just like raising kids or this or that. And like you said, social media has kind of exacerbated some of those pressures. And so when I find an organization that's like really deep diving on this one thing, I find it like so soothing, right? Because I can just like stay in this lane and learn and like not be like bouncing all over the place. So what is some of the most compelling research? And I know you talk about the how, but can you just kind of give us a snapshot about some of the compelling research about why we should be having family dinner?
Sure. And I'm just going to, you know, right off the bat, this is by no means an exhaustive list, right?
Okay, cool.
You can definitely, there's a lot more that I won't even get into, but some of my favorites, right? So first of all, kids who eat dinner with their families tend to have better mental health outcomes, right? They tend to bounce back more easily from bullying. They tend to have a lower risk of depression and anxiety, lower risk of eating disorders and substance use, right? And they tend to have stronger peer relationships outside of the home. So that's kind of one thing. There are some really interesting additional things which go across, you know, social, emotional, physical, nutritional, all the different benefits, academic. But one thing that I always love to point out is that with little kids, like, you know, toddlers, preschool, eating dinner with your family actually is a better predictor of literacy skills, right? So kids who eat with their families tend to have larger vocabularies. they tend to have better storytelling skills because often what happens at the table is we talk about our day, right? Parents and older kids are modeling how do you tell a story about something that happened. And so little kids kind of pick up on this, right? Oh. They hear more unique words from the big people around them. And that all translates to better pre-literacy skills, even a stronger correlation than reading to them. Now, I'm like a huge proponent of reading to your kids.
Yeah.
You should definitely read to your kids.
Yeah.
We will never say don't read to your kids, but like read to your kids and talk to them at dinner. And those two things together are a real kind of literacy powerhouse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with adults, parents are often really stressed out. And they sometimes come to us and they're like, dinner is the stress. Hmm. But in fact, even though I will not invalidate that perspective at all, yeah. I will say that research shows that parents who prioritize eating as a family tend to have greater marital satisfaction, stronger relationships than parents who don't try to prioritize family mealtimes. So there's a whole host of things. We'll kind of leave it there, but there are things that go all the way across the lifespan from birth to age 100, right? There's a lot of stuff. So I encourage people to dig in.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot there. That's so funny that dinner is the stress because I definitely feel that sometimes. And so it's nice to feel just, you know, like solidarity on that one.
Yeah. I don't think, look, I tell people all the time, like I'm kind of a family dinner professional, right? And like, I don't think I could tell you that dinner is not sometimes stressful, even in my house, right? Like we all feel it. It's okay.
Good. Okay. Now that we've cleared that. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about starting here is families with little kids. You know, my family, we have a 7, a 4, and a 2. And we are pretty good about dinner. That's something I'm pretty passionate about. It is a completely tech-free zone. But it is wild. I mean, it is just like so wild. So what advice can you offer for families with little kids?
Well, I mean, first of all, when somebody says to me, like, dinner is wild, I don't necessarily, like, my first impulse is to be like, well, is that a problem? Because I get what you're saying. But in fact, you know, one of the things that I think is really tough when you have the littles, and yes, dinner with littles is way less relaxing than it is as the kids get older, right? Totally get that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think actually kind of is a stumbling block for parents is their own expectations and what is actually developmentally appropriate, right?
Okay. Say more.
So when you have like really little people and you're asking them to be in this environment where, look, family dinner is a huge number of skills all at once. And for small kids, for kids of all ages, for kids who maybe have neurodivergences, right? This is a very challenging setting. They're being asked to do, you know, vestibular and proprioceptive and gross motor input all at the same time by sitting in a chair or on a bench and being what parents would call like seated appropriately, right? Mm-hmm. They're being asked to be still with their bodies sometimes in a way that maybe isn't quite, they're not quite ready for that. You know, then they have to also be managing their fine motor skills. They have to be managing forks and knives and spoons or eating with their fingers in a way that's not, you know, terrifically messy because parents are like, don't make a mess. Don't play with your food, right? Yeah. All of that kind of a thing. They have to be minding other people's space. They have to be minding not spilling. They have to be paying attention to conversation and social cues, right? There's a lot involved in each one of those things is a skill. So what I say to parents is,
like, and I don't even think you mentioned eating,
right?
Which is on top of all of that.
Right. On top of all of that, eating is in and of itself a learned behavior, right? That's a learned skill. And some kids take a longer time. Like there's just so much in it. And parents often have this expectation of like, we have to teach them manners. We have to teach them to sit. We have to teach them to behave. Well, okay, those things are important. But in fact, what's going to happen is over time, if you're modeling that, they will eventually get there, right? If you're making dinner stressful and corrective and expecting like the two-year-old to sit for more than 2 minutes, then you're already setting yourself up for frustration out of the gate.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So you've got to really prioritize, right? And you've got to decide. Like some people that we've worked with, some families that we know, when the kids are really little, they eat outside. You know, they live in maybe California or something where the weather's always good. they eat outside and they hose the kids off after, right? Because it's just less stressful.
Yeah.
You can do things like that. You can put a tarp down underneath the table and just don't worry about the spills, right? You can let kids play with their food. It's actually both developmentally appropriate and really good for the development of their relationship to eating. So picky eaters, if they're allowed to play with it, smear it, touch it, lick it, not eat it, way better for them than being controlled around how they interact with that food and being tried to force to eat it instead, right? Mm. If they're just pushing it around the plate, let them push it around the plate tonight. It's actually okay.
Yeah.
So all of those things, you know, you have to really calibrate your expectation around, you know, maybe you've got a 7-year-old who's just super wiggly, has a hard time sitting in a chair. Can that child take quick movement breaks or can that child stand at dinner?
Hmm.
Like, is that really going to derail your time as a family? I bet people spend more energy and stress trying to correct the behavior than they do trying to connect with the family.
Oh, we are totally guilty of that, you know, because the 7-year-old is the oldest. So we're like, get it together, kid, you know, and sometimes I walk away and I'm like, the only thing we did was harp on the kids for, to your point, being kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and that is not like, you just feel so deflated rather than that connection.
Right. And the thing is, like, you want, in order to get all the benefits of a family dinner, you have to have a positive mealtime environment. It has to be a place where everybody wants to be, because if it is stressful or tense or corrective, you're not getting that connection and that warmth that actually fosters all those benefits, right? So it's not a teaching platform, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I think as parents, we feel this pressure that it has to be a teaching platform. No, no, no. It's a place for the family to enjoy each other's company and relax. And let's remember that by the end of a long day, by dinner time, those younger kids are pretty much done. Their ability to actually self-regulate is way lower at dinner time than it is at noon.
Yeah, right.
So you've got to also build that in and understand that the behavior is not like I'm being bad. The behavior is, I have only so much to give to this enormous number of skills, and I'm learning. I'm learning how to eat and be with my family, and I need to just have fun, relax, get a little bit of food into me if I can. Sometimes the littles just can't, you know, and that's a whole thing too. It's okay, right?
Yeah.
And I need to be seen and understood and appreciated for who I am in this moment. It's okay to be flexible. It's more than okay to be flexible. This is not about, you know, making your kids good guests at Downton Abbey.
Well, mine would be kicked out. So
most of ours would be kicked. I would be kicked out of Downton Abbey. Probably.
Okay,
like, that's
good.
The wrong fork. You know, like, come on.
So what are some reasonable expectations then? If, like, let's say you have 2 or more kids who are, like, you know, under 8 years old.
Right. So great question. One thing I would say is don't expect any child to sit and eat for more, more number of minutes than they are age.
Okay.
Right.
I like that. Mm-hmm.
So like it's a general guideline. And by the way, some kids won't be able to meet that at first.
Yeah.
Right. But if you've got a 6-year-old, expect that they can give you about 6 quality minutes.
Okay.
Okay. The second thing is expect that they can give and take in conversation only to what's developmentally appropriate, which of course changes over time, right? But by, you know, late preschool, early kindergarten, kids should have a few exchanges back and forth in conversation if they are typically developing. And I'm going to just right now let parents know that there is a whole section of our site called the Welcoming Table that is devoted to advice for families whose children are not typically developing. So if you have a child with ADHD or a child who is on the autism spectrum or a child who has a feeding disorder or a child who has any kind of learning communication disorder, anything like that, we have a whole thing for you. Okay.
It's so amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes. And it's brand new. So we're so excited.
Okay, cool.
So anyway, but if your kid is typically developing, you know, around preschool, kindergarten, they can go back and forth a few times in conversation. Okay. That's about it. they can start to tell you a little bit about their day. They can start to tell you a story about something that happened, but it's going to go like wildly off the rails half the time, right? They don't know, like, does a little kid know not to interrupt? No, probably not, right? And you have to just kind of keep all that in mind. As far as eating, that tends to be the biggest thing with the little kids is parents like put all this, all the eggs into the basket around what are they eating? How much are they eating?
Yeah.
Are they eating well, right?
For sure.
And that is probably the number one pressure of family dinner when they're little is we have this like conscious or subconscious thing around making them into good eaters.
Yes.
right? Probably. I see the light of recognition in your eyes.
Yes.
Right? That's not our job. Hmm. It's not your job. Your job is to, you're like, oh my God.
Okay. Really?
It's not your job. Your job is to offer the foods that you want to offer to your family and that you are able to offer to your family. Hmm. Their job is to choose what they're going to eat and how much they're going to eat. And no amount of you trying to get them to try it, trying to coerce them, trying to entice or incentivize, right? Oh, let's have two more bites because you're 2 years old. We've all done it.
Yep.
Not a good idea. Because it teaches them to override their internal cues. It teaches them that you know more about their body than they do, right? Automatically sets kids up to overeat and makes it a pressure situation. So coming to the table already feels stressful to them because they don't know if we're going to try to force them to eat their broccoli.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. I feel like that's kind of where we are. Like, I think dinner is, we have a lot of fun and you know, all the things, but there's definitely a focus on eating and focus on the food. And my fear is that it turns into a negative experience and then they don't want to come to dinner and then they're not talking about their day and yada, yada, yada.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's so hard to do, but it's okay to let it go. If your children are healthy, if they are, you know, growing, if they are sleeping, if they are doing child things and you feel satisfied with where they are and their pediatrician feels satisfied with where they are, there are kids who make it all the way to adulthood on 10 foods. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that you never introduce new foods.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like you should make a second meal. Right. No, we're not doing right. We're not saying you should become the mom who like has to make the chicken fingers for the one kid and the burger. No, dinner is dinner. Right. This is what we made. This is what we have. But be reasonable about it. You know, one of our favorite things to do is like break meals apart and to build your own components.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you've got the veggie here and the meat here and the this here and the that. And everybody can just put what they want on their plates. And then parents don't comment.
don't
comment because you do this enough over enough time and eventually kids settle into their own eating patterns and preferences. They will learn, I promise. Right?
See, but like I'm like resisting you. I'm like, but then they'll never have broccoli and they'll never eat healthy. And then, you know, that's the fear, right? Like that's kind of like the part I'm holding on to, like I need to teach them how to do this.
Yeah, but if you, and that's like so relatable, but if you're the broccoli pusher, not only are you A, going to make a kid more resistant, because we all know children, like the one thing that they will do is the thing you don't want them to do. And the thing they will least want to do is the thing that you're really incentivizing, right? They know kids are smart. So you've become like the broccoli pusher, right? Now in their mind, broccoli is elevated from all other foods to this weird godlike vegetable status, right?
Like, yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's broccoli, right? And then they know inherently that like there's something weird about broccoli. It's not on the same level as chicken. It's not on the same level as rice. It's not on the same level as apples. It's broccoli.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that setting it apart like that and like, you know, and it could be any food, of course, but like, anytime that we're trying to put one food on a pedestal or one food group on a pedestal and trying to like get the kid to eat it, they experience that, even if it's positive pressure, as stress. Hmm. And their whole relationship to that food is going to, over time, become less and less positive.
Yeah,
more and more adversarial. And maybe they'll eat the broccoli in your home, you know, because like they've kind of been put in that box now.
Yeah.
If you've been successful, some of us can't make it happen.
Yeah.
But by the time they go out on their own, parenting's a long game, right?
Sure, absolutely.
By the time they go out on their own, there's a pretty even chance that instead of learning to love broccoli over the years because they've been forced to eat it all that time, the first thing they're going to do is drop broccoli from the menu forever because it's the thing my mom made me eat and I didn't want to eat it.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. That makes sense, you know? And I think of my own experience as a kid. I feel like my mom, she listens to most of my podcast episodes. But like my mom, like our vegetable was like a side of pasta. Like we just had a side of pasta with everything. So I feel like I grew up eating hardly any vegetables. And here I am loving vegetables. You know, I feel like I eat pretty healthy. And so I'm like, you're raising some very good points here, Brie.
Right. And you know what? It's okay to make things fun too, right? Like my mom served a whole bunch of different vegetables, but you know, my husband always says in his house, the vegetable was steamed. There was no butter, no salt, no, right? And that was like, nobody was allowed to put butter or salt or anything on their vegetables because it wasn't considered good for you in his household growing up.
Sure.
Right. My mom steamed things, but also sauteed them, grilled them, roasted them, right? Lots of different ways. And we were allowed, I remember when I was really little, every time we had broccoli, there would be butter and Parmesan cheese right near my plate. And if I wanted, I could put butter, I could put Parmesan cheese, I could put salt, I could put, she didn't care. I could, I could make that broccoli into Snow Mountain with a little shaker of Parmesan cheese, right? As long as I was going to be happy with my dinner, that was okay. Right. And I learned that there are ways I liked broccoli and ways I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't like asparagus, even with butter and salt. Now as an adult, I love asparagus. But it's because I was allowed to have the positive association with the vegetable all the way through. Like, okay, well, if you don't like it, you know, you can just take a little bit. You don't have to finish it, whatever, right? Like, you don't have you know, as an adult, I was like, I'll try asparagus again. And of course I did like it, you know?
Yes.
So you kind of have to think of, you know, what relationship are you allowing that child to have, not just to the food, but to their own body and their own autonomy.
Yeah.
Right. Nobody wants to be forced to eat.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, you haven't talked much about like eating disorders or all that, but we just know so much more about some of that stuff than we did 20 or 30 years ago. So it's
Total tip of the iceberg. And we're actually right now, I'm in the process of talking with some eating disorder experts to try to gain more knowledge on that very topic, right?
Awesome.
How do we at family dinner inadvertently make things worse? Parents do not cause eating disorders. I feel that's like really important, right? But how are we like, you know, setting up an environment that, you know, either supports kids' ability to have a healthy relationship to food in their bodies or not?
Yeah, right. It's a great question to ask. And I'm so glad that you are working on this. So, okay. So what about older kids? So let's say, you know, you're getting into the season of life that's like probably really busy, you know, they have their own friends. And so how do you continue to prioritize this and make it a positive experience when, you know, they're getting into their teen years and there's a lot of distraction?
Mm-hmm. So that is a great question. Because basically at this point in our culture, age 8 and up, like who has the nights to have family dinner, right? Yeah. It's completely bonkers.
Yeah.
And some of that, I should say, is family choice, right? There is, again, a lot of cultural pressure on parents to like sign your kid up for, if your kid plays baseball, like suddenly they have to be at the field like 5 nights a week when they're 7, you know, like there's like this weird amount of, oh my God, they have to do all the things and they have to do them at the highest level on every day of their lives, which, you know, some of that is up to parents to opt out a little bit, right?
Oh, 100%. 100 And we are like big sports people. And we just literally had a big conversation about signing my 4-year-old up for T-ball. And I was like, to what end? Why? Is he going to be any better if we sign him up at 4 versus 6? I'm not sure that he is. Like, we can do this. We're fine. We don't need to do it.
And honestly, like, again, listeners, we have a whole special section on the site devoted to kids sports and family dinners. And it's not really, it's framed around kids sports because that is the most common kind of big picture time suck challenge thing.
Yeah.
But it's really for any, you know, like I have one of my kids is an extremely serious classical musician.
Okay.
That in and of itself is the same kind of time suck
sure
as
is.
Sports,
yep.
Right? Like some kids do dance as their sport. Some yep. kids do theater. They're all, it's all there. But so that whole section, we actually talked to a sports psychologist who works with professional teams and who is a dad and a grandfather. And he was like, you know, it's essentially exactly what you said. Like, realistically, people, none of your kids are going to go to, like, you know, the odds of your kid going to college on a sports scholarship or joining the NBA or the NFL or what, or going to the Olympics, like, very, very slim. Okay. And what you don't get back is the time as a family that you poured into T-ball at 4, right? Or like extra gymnastics coaching at 6 because you were hoping that your kid would like get a scholarship someday.
Yeah.
That's, you know, no judgment to anybody who makes those choices. But his point was, and my point is, be very clear about yeah. why you're doing that, right? And if what it's interfering with is your ability to have a family life that satisfies you, then there's, you know, maybe something about your priorities that needs to just shift a little bit. So that's kind of first thing. But that being said, you can have the best of intentions. And the older your kids get, believe me, I know, mine are teenagers now.
Okay.
You end up with something on the calendar constantly.
Yeah.
And parents too, right? Work meetings, community, right? I joined the PTA or whatever. And now like I have that meeting and my husband is coaching the soccer league. And you know, like there's just all the things that take up everybody's time. So first things first, it does not have to be dinner. Mm. We are the Family Dinner Project, but it does not have to be dinner.
Okay.
It can be breakfast. It can be lunch. It can be dinner. It can be snack time. Any opportunity to sit down in a focused manner with your family, food, fun, and conversation, and you're covered, right?
Okay.
So if it's like after practice at night and your last kid gets home and everybody has like, you know, the younger kids have had dinner earlier because they can't wait or whatever, but now everybody sits down for like a bowl of ice cream and some berries and like talks and laughs and has the bonding.
Yeah.
That there you go. You okay. did it. You did the thing. Okay. Another thing is, it does not have to be the entire family, right? So it's okay to eat in shifts. The guiding principle is no one eats alone.
Mm, I love
that. So, you know, you've got a kid who's got to like run out to practice at 5 p.m. and they're not going to be home till 8, but you really want them to have the experience of like sitting with you. You make them like the heavy pre-practice snack meal.
Yes.
Right? And you sit down for 20 minutes while they eat and you have that like prioritized moment of connection, right? Some families will even, if they're going to do a few shifts through the night, you know, we tell people you can start like a conversation jar where like you've written down, you know, the question of the night that everybody's going to answer. And the first couple of people write down their answers and put it in the jar. And then the next couple of people pull it out and see what the others answered. And then they have the conversation and they answer it. And then they put it back. And then the next people, right? And then
yeah.
the next time you're all together, you can kind of read it back out and be like, oh my gosh, we all had the same conversation. Here's what we all answered, right? Or even make a guessing game of it. Like, here are the answers. Who said what?
Yeah.
Just that way to kind of keep connected. You can FaceTime a parent in, like if it's, you know, one parent is on a work trip or whatever. This is the beauty of technology.
Yes.
You know,
you can FaceTime for sure.
them, you can Zoom them in, have a virtual dinner with them. It's all okay. It's all good.
I really like that advice, Bree, because I feel like, again, there's a lot of pressure for family dinner and I have some teen nieces and nephews, and I'm like acutely aware of how crazy it is over there. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of crazy here, but it is different. And so I think, you know, like my sister-in-law, she's like, they always want to talk at 10 p.m.
They
and
do.
To your point, I'm like, hey, then pop some popcorn, and it sounds like you can get the same effect going a different way.
You can, absolutely. And that is a huge point about teens, especially. Yeah, they want to talk later at night, usually when parents are like not at their best to talk, which is like I feel like it's an evolutionary kind of like,
yeah, I think you know, it is.
It's a little teen joke on the parents. Now I'm ready to talk to you.
Yeah, oh, you're exactly.
Going to bed? That's, you know, that's too bad. But it's important for parents to recognize that, because what happens is, especially with teens, they're so busy, we're so busy. You sit down to dinner and the first impulse that parents have is to be sort of transactional, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Did you get that assignment done? Did you talk to your coach? How was the test? What's your grade like in that class that you were worried about? Where are you going this weekend? Where do I need to drive you, right? Your teenager, who probably is like exhausted because, you know, school start times being what they are, they probably got 3 hours less sleep the night before than they needed, right? And then they had like a whole day of being a teenager, going to school and whatever else that entails, right?
Yep.
Social pressures, after school activities, whatever it is, a job or whatever. They come home, they sit down, they just want to eat. And they don't want to feel like they're being interrogated.
Yeah, I get that.
So, you know, they're not only are they primed to talk later, but they're resistant to the kind of talking that we want to do when we see them. And so parents of teenagers have different conversation starters ready. Okay. Mm.
Okay. Like, give us an example. What's a good one?
So, you know, one thing actually that you can do is to start with a story about yourself, right? And in a very like low-key way, like, I saw this thing today. It reminded me of you. Let me tell you about it.
Or
teenagers love to feel grown up, right? So I'm having this situation at work. It's so frustrating. I'm going to tell you about it. I want you to tell me what you think, right? That's a good one. Or if you want to be super low key, super low pressure, try to be a little more like imaginative, a little more whimsical. You can be like, hey, you know, if you had unlimited money and 4 weeks to take a vacation anywhere in the world, where would you go? What would you do? Who would you bring with you?
Love it.
Right. So like trying to get into that space of what would a teen actually maybe invest a little thought into, right? And some kids are still going to be like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
We all have our days, you know?
Right. And it's really important also, if your kid is having that day, to be like, okay, do you want us to talk to you right now? Or do you just feel like you need to focus on your spaghetti and take 12 deep breaths and just be a part of the family without participating right now?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's okay. I think it's really important to name that and give them the space to be like, yeah, no, I just need the spaghetti right now. I can't do the thing.
Yeah.
And then just make sure they know, like, all right, well, you know, I do want to hear how things are going with you. Like, I'd love to hear more about that thing you were saying yesterday, or, you know, I'm around later if you want to share.
Yeah. And it's just what you said earlier. It's the long game, right? A couple nights of teens, you know, being teens, it's the long game and getting up and do it again. I love those conversation starters that you shared. I think that's, and for some reason, I'm also thinking of just like teen boys too. Like, you know, my niece, if, you know, she's willing to do the girl gab thing with me, you know, like we know how to do that. But I think sometimes, not to pigeonhole teen boys, but like, I think that's a really useful tool that I can imagine would be very effective.
Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, I know you said like you guys are no screens at the table.
Yeah.
I think it's a great goal for a lot of families. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not one that we make people hold to.
Mm.
What we say is you can use technology at the table, especially with teens, but you have to use it in a way that actually enhances your communication and connection, not distracts from it. So like you can't have your phone out and be texting your friend, right?
Okay.
Because they're not a part of this meal. You want to be, you know, with the people that you're with. But if you want to do Friday night pizza in front of like the TV show that you're all watching together or in front of a movie and everybody gets to pick, great. Like go ahead, you know, sit down, watch the movie or the show together. Talk about that. Enjoy that together. That's still okay. You know, we have some games on our site. We have a page called Technology at the Table that has a bunch of like different games and ways that you can get teens to use their phones for interaction at the table. So they can pull it out to pull up a trivia question, right? Challenge dad. We've got a selfie hot potato game where you can pass the phone around and be taking selfies together and kind of like captioning them. You know, you can do the try not to laugh challenge. Let them bring up the funniest thing they saw on YouTube that week and show it to you, right? Yeah. This is their currency. This is how they like start a conversation with their friends. So it can be how they start a conversation with you.
Yeah, I think, thank you for saying that. I feel like that's very thought provoking because I'm like kind of like a big anti-screen girl. But it's almost like kind of like the prompts that you gave us. It's almost a prompt. It's almost like a gateway to have better conversations. And if conversation and connection are the goal, then we can't just like throw the baby out with the bathwater, right?
Right. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be every night. Maybe you say like Fridays are screen nights.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, if you have a really like tech attached kid, maybe it's Mondays or no screen nights, right? Okay. You just flip it for a while and you make a goal of trying to, you know, try to do a little better each week. But if it's working for you, and by the way, again, there are some kids who maybe are on the spectrum or have other specific needs that having technology at the table makes them more able to sit and attend and be with the family in a way that's comfortable for them, right? So that's another thing too, is parents really do need to think about, you know, what is it that's helping facilitate my child feel safe and comfortable at my table? Because if they don't, then we need to fix whatever's not safe and comfortable.
Yes. And it goes back to some of the things I was saying about the focus on the food and the eating. And like, that's not the goal. And I feel like, you know, you got to keep sight on what your, not your goals are, but like, you know, what you're there to do and keeping them safe and comfortable. I feel like, especially when everyone is so busy and out the door and, you know, all these things, it just seems like such a finite moment to just be together. And you want to really take advantage and capitalize on that as a family.
Right. Right. And do that without pressure too, right?
Yes,
I sometimes feel like people are like, okay, this is our 20 minutes together as a family every night. And we need to make it like the best that it can be. And they get this like, you know, there's got to be a pot roast and everybody has to like, you know, whatever. And it just it feels automatically like you're kind of setting yourself up for failure because we're all real humans. And the day that you intend for everything to be perfect is going to be the day that like something catastrophic happens and somebody like bursts into tears at the table.
Always.
And, like, right. I mean, because humans. So, you know, but what you said is really important that family meals are about setting aside a moment regularly, each day if you can, once or twice a week if, you know, if that's the best you can manage, but setting aside a regular routine moment to communicate to one another that you are important enough to each other to sit down and share a meal and prioritize that communication and that time together.
Yeah.
Right? It's, you know, people say to us all the time, well, but I talk to my kids in the car on the way to and from sports practice. Doesn't that count? Of course it counts. Like talking to your kids always counts.
Right.
But it doesn't communicate the same priority.
Yeah.
It doesn't communicate the same specialness, the same, you are important enough to me to stop what I'm doing.
Yes.
And bring us all together. And we are important enough to each other as a unit to try to do that at the same time so that we are all together. And that means something in a different way. It just does. And kids pick up on that.
And that's like the, like, you know, buzzer going off, like game over, right? That's it. That is the point and the goal and the payoff and the advantage and pouring into your kids and all the things, right? And so my last question for you related to that. So like, let's say there's someone listening and they're like, okay, you sold me. I'm going to make some changes. We're going to do this. Where is a place they can start? And also like, what if it feels like really awkward? Like what if their first family dinner is just terrible because they don't know how to do it? Like what encouragement can you give for the mom listening out there?
Right. So I would say, you know, sometimes my family dinners are really awkward and we've had dinner together almost every night, you know, for a long time. So first of all, take heart, but start slow, start simple, right? So you're always thinking of three things: food, fun, and conversation. Those are the elements of a really beneficial family dinner. You're not going to do well on all three of them every night, Like, there's the secret sauce. You're not always, you know, you spill the tea on that. You're not always going to get them all right. But first of all, don't overthink it. Start with the most reasonable time that you can do this. So if it's just once a week and it's really, you're looking at the calendar and you're like, it's only Thursday night, fantastic. If that's what jumps out at you, that's when you do it, right? Don't try to like, oh my gosh, but we have to start there.
Okay. I like it.
Start with food that you know is not going to cause a thing, right? If at all possible, even if it's takeout pizza the first time, okay? Get a pizza from everybody's favorite pizza place, put it on the table, right? Grab some plates and some napkins and like, that's fine. Don't overthink it. It's, you're not engineering something here. You're just trying something out. And then, you know, I would recommend having a couple of conversation starters at the ready. We have tons of them on our website.
Yeah, you have
at thefamilydinnerproject.org/conversation. And if you follow us on social, we're constantly sharing like graphics and, you know, here's 20 for teens or here's like 10 you can use on date night or whatever. Yeah, right?
They're so great. That's such a great resource.
But like, you know, also take into account your kids, right? So if you're trying to do this for the first time with like, I don't know, maybe just speaking a little bit from experience here, a 14-year-old boy, you know, perhaps he might be like, you printed out conversations.
Sounds about right.
Right? Like, mother. And then you're not getting anywhere. So just maybe, you know, have a few like at the ready in the back of your mind.
Yes,
but don't
funny.
Necessarily like go, hey, I printed out these great, you know, right? And also, you know, have something fun in your back pocket to do. Right. Even if it's like everybody in your family likes playing Uno, bring the Uno deck to the table.
Yeah.
Right. You can play cards while you eat. That's sure. Okay. We once talked to a mom who she was a single mom. Her daughter was very kind of like shy and didn't love to talk at dinner. Mm-hmm. And so for like literally 10 years, they played a never ending Uno game at dinner every single night. Because it became their routine. It was their ritual. It was their bonding time. And the daughter would feel so much more comfortable to like say a few things while the game was going, right? It was much less like, hey, it's the two of us and the spotlight is on me and I need to answer these questions. No, it's like just, hey, let's do this thing, right? So, you know, or like have some trivia questions like on your phone that you can pull up and be like, all right, trivia time, right? Something easy, something fun, to just make it worth their while to be at the table, right? And then see how it goes and take it from there.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Would you say start small, start simple? Is that what you said?
Start small, simple. You know, don't pull a muscle trying to make family dinner happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a couple, you know, when we added our third kid, I just had to pare back some of the meals I was making. Like it was too much time and focus, and then they weren't eating it. And I was like, Susanna, to what end? Like, they like spaghetti and meatballs. And if we have to have that every Wednesday night, like, it's going to be great. It's a season.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, honestly, like, let's think about back in the day, people planned meals and it was the same rotation, right?
It was.
Like, your grandma could tell you, oh, we had meatloaf on Mondays, spaghetti on Wednesdays, right? And it was the same like five or six things every week, an occasional wild card thrown in. And now we like live in an era where it's like, well, if I don't make Thai chicken stir fry and like this curry thing and this like gourmet pizza, I have failed on meal planning. My God, right? Like,
yes. And I know you're joking, but totally, like you're right. It's everywhere. It's
right.
It's so much pressure.
It's so much pressure. And it's like, you know what? My kids would totally rather that I made like spaghetti and meatballs on Sunday. And then like the meatballs show back up later that week with meatball sandwiches when we're on the way out the door to practice. Right.
Everyone's
like,
happy.
Right. Why am I doing these things to myself? Yeah. Don't do the thing. You're just, nobody is judging you, but you.
Yeah.
Right.
True. True.
So are your kids fed? Are they coming to the table feeling relatively safe and happy? Is your family enjoying the time together? Like, game over. Your job is done.
Yeah. And I think that is such a good note to end on, because it doesn't have to be more complicated than that. And I feel like we are, and I blame social media, and I feel like I'm pretty good with like, oh, I don't need that. But it's just like also, you know, it's so funny. My daughter's lunch, I pack the same thing every day. She's never complained. She's never asked for anything different. And I told a friend that the other day, and she texts me later. She goes, that is the most freeing thing someone has ever told me. And I was like, oh, okay, I just, you know, it's, I'm not. That's just where we are.
Right. You know, and if she likes it and she eats it, okay, great. Like,
let's, whatever.
Yeah, let's just calm down. I went out of town recently and my husband doesn't really cook and my kids can a little, right? But like, you know, it's not the same as having me home. So like, I was trying to think what I could leave them with instructions that they could make and whatever. And finally, like, I was like, you know what? They can eat English muffin pizzas. Like, it's really, it's not going to hurt anybody. No, why am I bending myself into a pretzel here?
Here's
some English muffins. Here's some sauce. Here's some cheese. Make some pizza. Oh my gosh. Right. Done.
Yeah. Done. I'm out of here. Oh my gosh. Bree, this is, I just really like what you shared. I think it's really going to take a lot of pressure off families. And I think as moms, you know, we're always trying to like add more in and then reevaluate and take more out. And I just think you have given us not just like the why, but the how, which is so valuable. So if people want to learn more, where is a good place they can get more information?
So thefamilydinnerproject.org. And you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Family Dinner Project. And on Twitter at FDP_tweets. Yeah. And yeah, I would just say always reach out if there are questions, you know, message us. We love to help people. So that's why we exist. So, you know, if you don't find something you're looking for, ask, do we have it? Possibly. Should we make it? Maybe. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Bree. I just feel like I have so many great takeaways. So I really appreciate you making time to be with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening in today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Be sure to share with us on Instagram what you liked most about the episode by tagging me at Susanna.McMonagle. And lastly, if you want more information about the 5 to 8 shift, you can check out our website, the5to8shift.com. We'll see you guys next time.